We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 245. The Yankees won 2 out of 3 down in Philly, got rid of the bad taste of the Tampa sweep.
Yeah, I mean, they couldn't finish the final game. The bats really completely fell asleep.
I don't think they were trying.
It didn't look like they were trying. The lineup didn't look like they were trying, to tell you the truth, in the beginning of the game. So, you know, who's to say that the actual players in the lineup were trying? But they won the series. That's what matters. Getting back on that. On that good, on those good vibes, winning some series, so we're good with that. Rolling into the Boston series now.
I was actually really curious, I was keeping an eye on how they would come out of that tough weekend and see how they would respond. And I thought they responded great on Monday and Tuesday. You kind of have to chalk up Wednesday to like I just said, they almost weren't trying with the lineup they put out there, with Sessa on the mound making his first start since last August, I believe. He was on a pitch limit. The bottom of the order featured Neil Walker, Kyle Higashikoa, and Luis Sessa. Boone loves giving those double off days, so it was almost like a give-up game.
There were a lot of pitchers hitting, too, in probably spots that they normally wouldn't hit. It was it was definitely one of those games where it seems like you're resting your guys before the Boston series, giving them an extra day off, just like they tried to line up the pitching staff, you know, exactly the way they wanted it for the Boston series. That's why Sessa was pitching tonight, and you know they're giving their position players the majority of the day off too. So, yeah, Boone definitely put a lot of priority, I think, in getting people some rest before this weekend.
Yeah. We have a very busy show today, a very busy week coming up, actually. So at the back half of this show, Scott, you spoke with Chad Jennings. He writes now for The Athletic. He's been on the show a few times talking Red Sox, so we're going to preview that Red Sox series with Chad. Then, obviously, for those who are coming to the June 29th event, we are looking forward to that. We sold it out. 300 people going to be in Section 205. That's going to be a ton of fun. We now know the pitching matchups. We are not getting Chris Sale, unfortunately, but still going to be a hell of a lot of fun. And then also, if you guys want to come to the event after that, it's July 22nd against the Mets.
Yeah, that's a Sunday night. That's a Sunday night baseball against the Mets Subway Series. We're doing the pregame at the Bronx Brewery. You can get your tickets on the website. It's shop.bronxpinstripes.com. If you go to bronxpinstripes.com, there's a link on there to get to it. It's going to go quick. So there's tickets already. A lot of tickets already been sold. This one sold. This one definitely sold out, you know, a couple weeks ahead of the game. And again, I expect these tickets to go on the secondary market well above what we're asking. So you're getting a good deal. Plus you're getting a t-shirt. Definitely get in on it. Bring your friends, get your crew together. And yeah, we're going to continue to grow this thing. So, I can't wait for a Friday night. Actually, the anticipation is starting to kick in, and I'm really pumped up. You and I just finished transferring tickets to everybody, so now everybody has their tickets, which is great. People have their t-shirts, so it's a reality now. Friday night just needs to come, and we're gonna get loose in 205.
You said you're looking forward to Friday. How about looking forward to Thursday night, the CC Sabathia softball game?
A little bit of that too. Yeah, it's gonna be a lot of fun. We get the invite to do some press coverage at the CC softball game. The pitch in, they raise a lot of money for good charities. Usually, they're going towards kids in the inner city. You know, playing games, doing all sorts of different things. They spread the money out, but CC does a lot of good things, and this thing actually has a lot of really good people. There's going to be a lot of Yankees there.
Yeah, we're going to be there for the red carpet event. Have you ever... See, this I don't think is going to be like a normal red carpet. Like you think of red carpet for like an award show or something. This is going to be for a softball game. So I don't know if people are going to be dressed up. Be interesting to see. But definitely follow us on social media. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We're going to be posting pictures, posting videos from the event. I am really looking forward to it. Like I said, it's going to be a very fun, very busy couple of days.
Yeah, full-blown paparazzi mode tomorrow night for these guys. So
asking the hard-hitting questions.
The big questions. The big ones.
All right, let's get into this series with the Phillies. So the Yankees seemed to play their best baseball against the best teams. There was a stat that the Yankees had a .725 winning percentage entering Wednesday's game against teams above .500. That is the best in baseball since 1901.
Is that a good? Is that a good thing? I'm thinking of like when I think that far back, I just think of, you know, the chants we used to chant at the Red Sox the last time they won a World Series. That's no longer the case. So this is an old stat that I don't think about the early 1900s much anymore.
Yeah, I don't even think there were fences on baseball fields back in 1901.
So a double in the gap is a dinger.
Yes. But it just goes to, it goes back to what we have talked about many times, especially towards the early parts of the season when we saw them really struggling against teams like Baltimore and Miami, but playing well against other teams. This team, I guess in a good way, plays to their competition.
Yeah. I mean, they get up, they realize when there's an opponent in front of them that has an opportunity to potentially knock them out or take a home field advantage situation away from them. And that's a good thing. Not that it's, the reverse of it's not a good thing. We don't want them playing down to the other competition. We don't want them being swept in Tampa or anything like that. But if they take care of business, they're going to lose games. I mean, this is a long season. There's a lot of games they play. Obviously, bad things are going to happen. Ruts are going to happen. And flukes are going to happen like what we saw in Tampa. But I think, as long as they're taking care of business and competing against the big teams, like they obviously are historically, that's huge. That's huge. And it just kind of proves, how this team gets up for those big games.
It was, yeah, there was the first 3-game losing streak was the loss to Tampa of the season. And you're going into Monday's game into Philly. That's the first time. What were they talking about on the broadcast that the Philly hasn't sold out 3 straight games
right.
Since 5 years ago or something like this. So obviously this was a big series. This was the first time the Yankees have been back to Philly since the 2009 World Series. So a lot of people were up for this. The Phillies were up for this. The Phillies are fighting in their division. And the Yankees are coming out on Monday with Jonathan Lasagna on the mound, the rookie making his third ever start. So shit could have really gone bad. It didn't, though. Loaisiga stepped up.
He did step up. He pitched really well. Like, this is a guy that had to, for his own sake, just come out and prove that, the last start wasn't what he was. And, we don't really know what he is yet. We're kind of seeing him and taking it all in and seeing how he pitches and how he handles different situations. And, I've been extremely impressed with the way that he's handled, pitching in the bigs. And I love his fastball. I think his fastball is phenomenal. And he can really pinpoint it. But the fact that he came out was as good as he was, went pretty deep with throwing a no hitter 5 innings. It's impressive to see a young kid do that on the road.
Yeah. You mentioned his fastball, but I thought his fastball curveball combination was the best that we've seen it so far. He had his 12-6 curveball, yeah, which we did not see as much in his first two starts, but he was playing off, and I know David Cone was talking about this, the same eye level. So he was throwing the fastball in the mid-90s up and then using that 12-6 curveball to go from that same eye plane and then just drop straight down at like 83, 84 miles an hour. It really was unhittable for 5 innings.
Yeah, and that's so impressive that he can make an adjustment like that. Or, the fact that he can just... The fact that he already has those mechanics that he can repeat and like Cone was saying, stay at that same eye level. And, that's something that they really don't need to teach at this point. Like, the kid has it. That's not something that everybody has. There are guys that definitely vary their release point or, where they are with their front leg, their land leg on certain pitches, not things that are easily picked up by the opponent, but they're still a little different. When this kid is repeating the way he is, the deception just adds to it. And then you throw in a 96, 97 mile an hour fastball on the black, because that seems like where he loves to be on the outside corners. It's good stuff. It's really exciting to see the way he's pitching right now.
And very effortless delivery.
Yeah. And I feel like this is all just like cake, right? This is just like extra dessert, because I don't think anybody that's a Yankees fan was expecting to see this kid in probably, maybe next year. And of those people, 50% of them are lying to you because they've never heard of him.
Well, he did start in single A this season.
Right. I mean,
that is a massive transition for, I think he's, what was he, 22, 23 years
he's
old?
He's young, yeah, somewhere yeah, down there.
And I know he had Tommy John surgery, which is a big reason why he started in Tampa this year. And because he was on the 40-man roster is another big reason why he didn't ever go to AAA, because it was just a roster shuffling move that the Yankees made. But we are seeing why the Yankees felt, A, that he was deserving of being put on that 40-man roster, and B, why they were comfortable of having him make the jump from AA to the majors.
Well, and it's also, it probably speaks to Brian Cashman going out and talking about different guys in his organization and inquiring about others for trades, you know, throughout the last year and a half, 2 years. And I'm sure his name came up quite a bit, and they knew that if they didn't protect him at that point, he was going to get snatched up immediately. So they realized, because I think Brian Cashman can gauge, and you know, the rest of the staff can gauge when they are going out, and you know, he's active. Cashman's talking to everybody all the time. So you know who is, you know, a desired commodity, a desired asset on your roster. And I think that that just kind of proves, like, it wasn't just the Yankees that were looking at him and knew that he was a talent. I bet there were other teams that were inquiring about this guy. And you know, the 40 man was a decision that they had to make. That's not an easy decision for a guy that's that low.
Right. And what I think we're going to see is he's going to continue to have growing pains, just like Herman has had some growing pains. But there's glimpses of hope for what these two guys can be as starting pitchers down the line. Now, I understand that a lot of Yankee fans are saying, well, how does that help us in 2018? If Loaiza or Herman's not going to be in the playoff rotation, then like, what's the point? Let's go out and get a starting pitcher. And I get all that. But in the meantime, these guys are developing and helping the team win. And that is still important now, because I do think the Yankees are going to get a starter. I think it's going to probably be in 3 or 4 weeks from now.
Yeah, absolutely. We don't know the time frame. I mean, that's something totally up for speculation. And depending on when the market starts heating up, I would assume you'll see some of these starters that have been talked about dropping. But you know, I'm not dismissing either that one of these guys could be a major contributor down the stretch. You know, we've seen guys that...
In what way, though? Out of the bullpen or out of the rotation?
You just don't know. You don't know because of the way that this pitching staff has not stayed healthy. The fact that they, you know, even if they were to make a trade for a starter at this point, I mean, who's to say that there's not another injury? Because we have guys who could, you know, we could fall into that category as probably, you know, next on the list for potentially getting hurt. CeCe's not getting any younger as the season goes on. You know, who knows how Tanaka does come back. We know he's throwing and he's feeling good now, but you just don't know how these things are going to happen. So, you know, one of these, whether it's Herman or Loaiza or one could be thrown into a situation later in, or stay in a situation late into the season. And if they get hot, who knows? We might see them on the mound in a playoff game. I'm not dismissing that.
Tanaka's been getting those hammies rubbed down.
Yeah, he should be.
So he should
be getting them rubbed down even when he feels good.
What about workload issues with Herman and Loaiza?
I think that's where it is, right? The organization has an innings count or a pitch count or whatever, however they're limiting the arm, but they are limiting it at some point in some way.
I think that's going to be a factor.
Yeah, especially for Loaiza.
Yes, definitely. Well, and Herman, because his innings high was last year. I think they said tonight it was like 109 innings.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean that, but we saw tonight him come out of the bullpen, and it's not. The problem is that there aren't really many other options when their spot comes around again, you know. So there's going to have to be something's going to have to give at some point. And I know Sessa came in and filled in a spot, so we kind of skipped a guy and pushed.
Well, they kind of went bullpenning.
Back.
Yeah, they kind of went bullpenning tonight.
They did.
I mean, they had Sessa start, but he only pitched 3 innings, and he was on a 75 pitch limit.
Right.
So it's they knew he wasn't going to go very deep in that game. I think 4 or 5 innings was about as good as they could have hoped from Sessa. So they had a bullpen plan tonight.
Yeah, and Herman was part of that bullpen plan because they're obviously the way that the schedule is working out, he's going to have to get a throw day in at some point. And I think he was ready to go, or he would have been lined up for Sunday as well, because their Sunday starter, they haven't announced officially, but it looks like it's going to be Severino.
Oh, it's going to be Severino. Yeah.
If Severino's not throwing in, you know, when Boston comes to town on that third day on Sunday Night Baseball, something's given. Isn't Price throwing on Sunday?
Yeah.
Yeah. Give me Sevy versus Price, please.
Yeah, I'm just sad that Gary Sanchez, David Price's daddy, is not going to be in the lineup.
Yeah. Somebody else take the role.
But say when Tanaka's back, could you see them going to a Loaiza-Herman combination as a fifth starter?
You know, I think at some point they're going to have to do something with, you know, to protect them from the innings limit, especially if they don't go out and acquire somebody in the next, you know, 2 weeks. If it is 3 to 4 weeks, then they're going to have to do something. But I think at that point, I don't think they'll keep Loaiza on the major league roster. I think they will send him back down. But again, even if he's in the minor leagues, the pitch count still is a factor. So I'm actually changing my mind as I'm talking. If he's throwing as well as he is, might as well get those innings in the major leagues because you can use them.
Yeah.
So hold on. Let me reverse that train of thought in the middle of the thought.
Scranton doesn't need another championship.
Right, exactly. Trenton, actually, because that's where he came from.
Yeah. Monday's game was eventful, though, after Loaiza left. Robertson escaped the jam that Loaiza left in the sixth. Robertson then got into the seventh, and we see Boone go to Betances, not only with an inherited runner, but with a plan in place to go into a second inning of work. And
with have to hit.
Betances is up there, Gary Sheffield bat wiggling, swinging like he's going to pull his friggin' rib cage out. That's how hard he was swinging. I was shitting my pants watching that. Yankee dugout was laughing because pitchers laughing is just a big joke anyway. It worked out, I guess, kind of. I'm questioning it, scratching my head, because Betances did get into some serious trouble in the eighth inning and Chapman had to bail him out. But it wasn't as big of a disaster as I guess a lot of people expected it to be when you use Betances in those situations.
I mean, this is something that's, you know, not in the book. It's not in the binder. It's not on the map. This page has been burned out of the binder long ago. It's not even in the history of Dellin Betances because this was his first major league at bat. So not only are we going into a second inning, which we know Dellin is so good at. He's so good in that second inning, coming out of the bullpen, sitting for, you know, 20 minutes, 30 minutes in between, and then coming back out and trying to throw and find the plate. He's awesome at that. But not only that, we're going to give him an at-bat in between. And not only is he going to get an at-bat, but he's going to treat it like wiffle ball in the backyard and go up there with the Gary Sheffield waggle. Because why? Because Gary Sheffield was one of his favorite players to watch hit. And that's what's happening out there. I'm like, this is real life. Like, I'm watching a major league player. I'm not even going to say hitter. A player out there literally doing an impression of a former player. Like, this is exactly what used to happen in the backyard playing wiffle ball. It was crazy.
Hey, if Betances had Gary Sheffield's bat speed, then I wouldn't mind. But something tells me Sheff's bat speed was a little bit better than
Betances. Is 6'8". How is he going to ever... Like, I was surprised that he got the bat around as fast as he did. But yes, it was a lot slower, but I'm still surprised he got it around. He looked like he was going to completely rip his torso in half the way that he was hitting. I hated every second of it. I hated seeing every single pitcher hit this during this series. There were way too many, and it needs to end. I can't handle it anymore. It's just, you know, it's just an injury waiting to happen.
Why wasn't Dellin Betances bunting in that situation?
You know, I saw you make that comment in the notes, and I'm sitting there reading that. I'm like, did you see him hit? Did you see him try to swing? You want him to bunt? That ball might hit him in the face. He might lean over the plate too much, and that ball might hit him in the face. He might foul the ball off into his face if it hits the bat. I don't want him anywhere near that ball. I want him standing in the box, in the back of the box, on the outside corner of the box, and standing there. Don't swing. Take some pitches. That's
okay. It's a runner on third base with one out.
Right.
The chances of him hitting a deep fly ball are 0%, as we saw.
The chance of him putting any kind of a bunt down are 0% also.
0.1%, but it's still a better percentage than him
driving. What is the bunt going to do?
Around.
So then you want him sprinting
down. You do a safety squeeze
squeeze with the pitcher up? You want him running down first base then, too.
No, running. Once he bunts it, all he has to do is jog 40 feet and end it.
Look, there's nothing good that's going to happen with him swinging or bunting.
Fine, then just let him take three strikes.
Yes.
But that needs to be an instruction going forward for all remaining National League games is don't hurt yourself, so just take three strikes down the middle. We don't care. We will move on.
But that's not the mentality. That's obviously not what Boone
is telling
them. No,
they're all up
there
trying to hit a ball 400 feet like they're Giancarlo Stanton in batting practice.
I know, and it's become like an internal like laughingstock as well. So they're all like joking about it, like it's a fun time. And I get it. Like if you're on the field, that's probably a lot of fun. You're laughing at your boy. Your boy knows he's going to look like an idiot, so he's going up there and just trying to be Gary Sheffield, which is ludicrous. But you know, he knows he's not going to hit the ball. They're not thinking about injuries. The fact that the coaching staff is letting this happen, to me, is where it needs to stop. Like, the players are going to be players. They're going to go out there and do these things. That's fine. It is what it is. But the coaching staff should be saying, take some pitches. Don't hurt yourself. We finally got you right. Now I'm going to throw you out in a second inning. Please don't swing the bat. But nobody's telling him that.
And we haven't even seen CeCe get an at-bat, and we know he loves to hit. He swings like he's Babe Ruth up there.
I want to see CeCe hit. That's the only pitcher I want to see hit.
Okay, you mentioned 2 minutes ago that Sabathia could go down with an injury at any second.
Yeah,
you
but CeCe can hit.
You want him to take some rips up there?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. CeCe's a vet.
Boy.
He's an old vet. He's got it. We're going to be watching him hit softballs.
That's true. Does he hit one out? That'll be the main question.
Yeah, I actually did hear when they were interviewing him about the game, he did mention that they're not going to be hitting in the game. And I don't think Stanton's going to be hitting in the game either. So seems like those were specific instructions. So here's the question now.
Or it might just be unfair.
Or, well, no, because there's other guys in there that can hit as well. But the Yankees won't let him swing at a softball, nor Giancarlo Stanton swing at a softball in a charity event, but they'll let Dellin Betances go up there and hit a major league pitcher. Okay, makes sense.
It did not come back to bite him in the ass. The Yankees got the win. And then Severino comes out. He dooted up on Tuesday just when the Yankees needed him to dude up, because there were a lot of dudes that pitched in the bullpen the night before and a lot of dudes that were going to have to pitch in the bullpen on Wednesday. So what does Severino do? Goes out there, 7 innings, no runs, 9 strikeouts, no walks, lowers his ERA to 2.10, and the Yankees improved to 15-2 when Severino is on the mound.
I mean, that's your boy, right? That's your Madison Bumgarner. Ace, typical.
Yes, that is
absolute.
Ace.
You know,
ace material.
Nobody could dispute the fact that this guy is a horse, an ace of this team. I mean, it's just so obvious now that he's taking this role and really relishing it as well. Because I feel like I'm repeating myself, but it's just to me, it seems like it ticks up every single time he takes the ball. The confidence on this kid and the ease.
The bulldog. Didn't we call him a bulldog? Like the bulldog mentality. Just give me the ball. I'm working quickly.
Absolutely.
Give me the friggin' ball.
And he's got that. And he wants to go out there and throw. And he's hitting 101 in the seventh inning. And it wasn't just 101. He was hitting 100. He hit it consistently. He was hitting triple digits quite often in this start. So the kid was out there like really just taking it by the balls and lowering his ERA to 2.10. That's unbelievable. I mean, he's right now, you know, definitely one of the front runners, if not the front runner for Cy Young.
It's him and Verlander and possibly Kluber. Those are the three guys right now in the American League. I can't tell which one of these stats I like better from Severino's performance. So he threw 23 out of 26 first pitch strikes, which is awesome. And he also threw 29 pitches of 99 plus miles an hour. He has 117 pitches this season of 99 plus miles an hour, which is the most in Major League Baseball by far by a starting pitcher.
It's incredible.
I don't know which one I like better.
And how many pitches did he throw? It was right around 100, wasn't he? He got pulled at 100?
Yeah, I think he got pulled at 104.
104, okay. So 29 were...
Let's call it 28%, 29%.
Crazy. That's crazy. And you know, 101 in the seventh. So this guy is not losing a damn thing from the first inning to the seventh inning. So yeah, it's exactly what you want. It's exactly what you want, and it's super impressive. And I, every single time he goes out there, I'm more impressed. He's fun to watch.
He did not use his changeup. That makes two starts in a row not really using his changeup. He gave up a homer to Seattle to Seager on a changeup early in that game. And after that, did not really use it and only basically threw fastball sliders on Tuesday night. I mean, he didn't need to throw his changeup because he was that dominant with his fastball and his slider. Philly couldn't touch him. We've talked about Severino and his third pitch and having that as something that he needs. He's going to need to show that third pitch. His changeup doesn't need to be elite. It just needs to be usable. I think against teams like Philly or against Seattle, he can get away with fastball slider. But he's facing the Red Sox next. And he has struggled against the Red Sox this season and in the past. He has, I think, a career 4-something ERA against the Red Sox. He's going to need to have a third pitch if he wants to beat teams and be this dominant against Red Sox too.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think it's not as important as it was last year, because now he has proved that his fastball and slider are as dominant as they are, and you can't really tell what's coming because the fastball and the slider look the same out of the hand. And he's throwing them both at high velocities. He's got good, you know, differential between them. But he can pinpoint it. And that slider is just absolutely filthy. What was the beat writer who from Philly said gas and filth? He's got two pitches, gas and filth. By the way, I already made a t-shirt about that too, by the way. It's coming out soon.
It's great. It's great.
But yeah, that's when you're that dominant, when you have an A+ slider and an A+ fastball, you could definitely get away with that when you're
okay, you can get away with a C- changeup then.
No, you absolutely can. But at the same time, you don't need it as much. Whereas before, he didn't have the confidence. He wasn't able to throw the fastball for strikes as much as he is now. The slider wasn't, it was good, but it wasn't nearly what it is this year. And, you know, when you have those two pitches that are such dominant pitches, you don't need it as much. But I totally agree with you. He's going to need to, you can't live on two pitches as a starting pitcher. Mariano was able to do it because he was pitching one inning. Severino is now going to be, you know, a guy who's consistently getting into the seventh, eighth inning. And then when you start playing better teams, yes, you're going to need that third pitch. And like you said, you don't have to throw it a lot. You just got to know it's there. If it's in the back pocket, and that's what we've always said about him, the changeup doesn't need to be great. But if he shows the changeup, then it's in the back of the mind of the player. And now they're looking for three pitches that all look the same.
And I just don't want him to lose confidence in it. If he lost confidence because he gave up a home run to Seager, I don't like that.
I don't think that's the case.
You think he? What, you just think his fastball and slider were so good on Tuesday that? And I agree with you. Yes. I agree with you.
He I don't think that guy has losing confidence in anything. That's who that guy is right now. Luis Severino is walking to the mound confident in everything he throws. He chooses not to throw that. The game plan is: if we don't need it, why are we throwing it?
Well, does he need to prove it against the Red Sox? Not changeup. Just does he need to prove himself against the Red Sox? Because his worst start of the season came against Boston this year at Fenway. 5 innings, 5 runs. And 2017 against Boston in 4 starts, he had a 4.17 ERA.
Right. I don't think he needs to, I mean, proving it is leading to me that there's something to be proven. And, you know, he's done everything this year. He's pitched well in every situation. So I'm not going to think differently of him if he goes out there and doesn't have a great game. But he's just that type of competitor. He's already talked about that. He wants the ball. He's not afraid of anybody. He says, you know, this is the guy that is a different person now who's talking this way, who feels this way, and who can go out there and dominate a team with two pitches. I mean, it's great to see, because I don't think that they're going into this saying we're going to throw a fastball slider and that's it. I mean, I guarantee the game plan has some flexibility with that changeup. And if they need it, they'll throw it more often, or at least they'll show it in certain situations that they need to. But I just don't think they've needed to for some time now. And if they don't need to, then why do it? Why leave a changeup? That's definitely your third pitch, because it's by far his third pitch. It's definitely not one or two. So if you don't need your third best pitch, then why throw it?
It's fair. And he did shove the bats down the Astros' throat on 2 separate occasions this year.
Yep.
So the Red Sox are next. let's talk about Aaron Judge's home road splits. It's a little jarring. So at home, he is maybe the best player in the world. He is batting .359, .486, .718 with 13 homers and 12 doubles in 181 plate appearances at home. And then on the road, 162 plate appearances, .193, .296, .386 with 7 homers and 6 doubles. A couple of big key differences. So at home, he strikes out 27% of the time, which for Judge is not bad. On the road, 35%, which is a good amount higher. And his BABIPs at home, .463, which is insane, insanely high. And then on the road, .256, which is low.
So there's things that we can deduct from this, right? He's striking out more on the road, and I don't think that's a crazy difference. I'm curious to see what other, you know, big power hitters, where their numbers are, splits home and away.
Well, here, let me also add this. By comparison, last season it was about the same home and road strikeout rate.
Okay, I mean, I kind of understand the strikeout rate, and I don't think that's concerning at all. Honestly, 27% and 35% on the road, it doesn't seem like a concerning number. Some of the other numbers are pretty concerning though, and concerning. Take that with a very grain of salt, because he's doing extremely well. But 193, 296, and then you're looking at, you know, just significantly less power, where you're seeing less home runs, less doubles, the extra base hits are not there. And it's like he's getting very lucky at home, or he's getting very unlucky on the road. I don't know what it is.
Do you think maybe it's just a situation where he sees the ball so exceptionally well at Yankee Stadium?
It could be. There's something like that could absolutely be the case, where his comfort level is that much better. He knows the ins and outs of that place. They have a good backdrop. That could be it. It absolutely could be it. His confidence level, I mean, just the way he walks up and approaches the plate, and the way that he feels stepping up to the plate at Yankee Stadium, I mean, he certainly feels comfortable there.
And last season he hit 33 of his 52 home runs at home. And we know he has power to hit it out of any stadium. It doesn't matter. He would have hit it out of those stadiums in 1901 with no fences. But at Yankee Stadium, you got the short porch. He can hit a ball off the end of the bat and it goes five rows deep at the short porch. So he also has that maybe comfort, maybe just fallback plan where let me just put the ball in play to right field. It's probably going to be a home run.
Well, and it's also interesting when you look at that too, and you're thinking of, think about the other side of it. If you're the opposing pitcher, you're trying to be more careful when you're looking at Aaron Judge at home, like, because you know what he does at Yankee Stadium. And you know that if he does miss it, if he misses a ball and just kicks it off the right side and flips it in the air, that it could be a home run. So, you know, there could be some of these pitchers that are just trying to be too perfect and leaving balls over the plate and you know, making too many mistakes at home. That the approach, I bet, is very different if you're talking to the same pitcher if they're at their home ballpark against Aaron Judge or at Yankee Stadium against Aaron Judge.
One thing that I've thought as I was looking these numbers up. So do you feel like Judge has been hot at any point this season?
No, it doesn't feel like he has been.
And in baseball, he ranks in the top 10 in on-base percentage, OPS, home runs, RBIs, and walks.
He just hasn't gone on one of those ridiculous streaks. I mean, granted, we've only seen him for a year, but
he's still a top 10 player, though.
I know.
So imagine if he does go on one of those runs like we saw last May, where I think he hit like 350, or in September, where he hit 15 home runs.
Yeah.
It's going to be a joke.
No, I know. It's absolutely a joke. The guy's unfair. He's a cheat code. I think Rich's tweet is still getting retweeted. The fact that this guy is that good and still hasn't hit that like major hot streak yet is awesome. I mean, that's just something we have to look forward to. Giancarlo looks like he's kind of going through it right now, or starting to, or, you know, maybe in the beginning stages of something like this. But Judge hasn't done it. And look, I think this is such good news for Yankee fans and for the Yankees and for Aaron Judge, because when he came up, everybody thought that he was going to be a, you know, 250, 240 hitter, maybe even less than that, you know, more of like the Adam Dunn type guy, where you're not going to see a lot of consistent numbers. You're going to see home runs, a lot of strikeouts, you know, some good power production, but you're not going to see a guy that's consistently hitting, consistently getting on base, consistently, you know, hitting gaps and hitting, getting extra base hits. And that's what we're seeing. He's not only a great power hitter, but he's a very good hitter. And that's danger for everybody, and it's huge for his career, because it seems like he's getting better at the plate and more confident and a better approach you know, every time he gets up there.
And even if he doesn't, say he's not the type of player to go on another one of these unbelievably hot runs, and he's just a consistent player day in and day out, that's awesome as well. And maybe he is getting a little unlucky on the road, and those numbers start to shift more towards the mean, and then boom, you just get that little extra bump from him on the road. So I thought it was worth pointing out, certainly not something to be concerned about.
You know, when he first came up and we were talking about, I think we did a show when we were talking about, this is before, it might've been after 2016, when he struggled at the end, and we were talking about comparables, right? And we're trying to, everybody always wants to put a name against somebody, and usually a former player, and like, who do they remind you of? And the one guy that I think we both came to, but you know, I'm looking at this guy and you look at the body type and you think of the Yankees, the guy that comes to mind is Dave Winfield. And when you look at Dave Winfield's career and the way that he was, Dave Winfield could get on base. Dave Winfield could hit for average. Dave Winfield could hit for power. They're very, very similar players.
He had a cannon for an arm.
You see Aaron Judge play more and more. The comparables to Dave Winfield, who is a Hall of Fame player, are very, very legit.
Yeah. Yeah. I do remember making that comparison. I think it was after he debuted. I think after we were there in person for his debut.
It was at some point. Yeah. I'm sure we called him a Hall of Famer after that game. There's no doubt about that.
Little breaking news here at 10:57 PM. The Yankees send down Luis Sessa.
Oh, shocking.
That was fun. Aaron Hicks has had a very good month of June. 83 plate appearances entering Wednesday, 280, 337, 587 with a 924 OPS and six home runs. And those six home runs are tied with Stanton for the team lead in the month.
You know, this is one of those things that we've been waiting for. We've been waiting to see what Aaron Hicks is with consistent at-bats, consistent playing time. And this is one of the bigger narratives in the offseason. Like, what's center field going to look like if Aaron Hicks is the guy who's out there every day? I mean, we all knew that Jacoby Ellsbury wasn't going to be there, and that Aaron Hicks was going to be the guy that was going to step in and play center field. But the thing was, I think the biggest question for us and fans is, who is he? You know, is he the guy that... you know, when he came back from that oblique, was like super hot and played at a very high level. We know what his defense is, but what is he at the plate? And I think he's starting to show his cards a little bit. I mean, he seems like he's turning out to be a very good hitter. And I'm impressed. I'm impressed with what he's very good. He's a good hitter. And I
No. What I'm saying is he may very well be a very good hitter.
This is the longest we've seen him. Right? I mean, stretch-wise.
No, well, last May and June, he had a similar stretch to this. My problem with Aaron Hicks is that we see flashes of this. And Cashman saw these flashes when he was in Minnesota. I mean, he loved the guy.
This is longer than that, though. It's been going on longer
than that.
It is
longer. But we've been duped by Aaron Hicks before, where he has a month to 2 months of really, really great production. 924 OPS is fantastic, especially with his defense in center field. But is he going to disappear for 2 months in August and September? I have no clue. He very well could.
The thing is that last year we saw him play, get hurt, play. It didn't seem like he was able to get into any kind of a groove. He's now had a good amount, 83 plate appearances, and in this latest stretch of the month, not hurt, playing well. Playing defense, playing almost every day, playing in the leadoff spot, moving around to different areas of the lineup. You know, I feel like we've seen a bigger sample size in one long stretch of Aaron Hicks consistently. And he has the job. Like, it's his job, center field. And I think that's a big deal for him, too. And yeah, we were joking kind of about the fact that when Clint Frazier would come up into the onto the team, all of a sudden Aaron Hicks starts playing well again. But before that, there was also talk, and you look at the numbers, and we had people come on and talk about this, that he was actually getting unlucky, you know, during the times that people thought he was struggling, and that it was only a matter of time until, you know, those balls that were getting caught that were going to drop. And that's what's happening right now. I mean, he's hitting the ball out of the park now, obviously at a high clip. He's tied with Stanton for the month. So, you know, I don't know. I feel like I'm starting to see more of what he is. It seems like he's coming into himself.
Yeah, and I had said on the show before that I don't like when Hicks leads off.
Yeah.
And Boone does it against lefties to get more righties in there, and he just seems to plug and play with Gardner and Hicks. But Hicks has proven me wrong in the month of June, and he was batting third tonight.
Well, tonight was a bit of an...
Right, anomaly. No, I understand, but what I'm saying is Boone uses Hicks as sort of like a guy where it does it, like, I'm just going to plug him wherever I need him in the lineup. First, third, sixth, seventh, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And that's how he's treated him.
Right. And he's, you know, he's proved that he can hit up anywhere in the lineup. It doesn't matter where you put him. But, you know, look, again, if I'm looking at him, I've been waiting to see, you know, kind of to get a better judgment on him. And I feel like I'm getting closer to a picture of who Aaron Hicks is. You know, I think he's probably like a 260 hitter. He'll if he were to have a full season, he'd probably hit 20 to 25 home runs. And that's he's going to play a phenomenal center field. And I'm totally good with that. Like, I think that's exactly what they need. They need a plus defender and a guy who's not going to hurt them on the offensive side. And that's exactly what Aaron Hicks is.
And I think he gives them deep at bats.
Yeah. And not not hurt them. That's being unfair to the way he's playing, because he's helping them right now. And he's doing, you know, he's doing very well for the spots that he's put in. So he's 100% contributing in a positive way. I'm really happy with the way he's turned out so far.
Haven't heard the trade or release Aaron Hicks.
It has not been a narrative
mailbags as much anymore, or the Brett Gardner ones, because both of those guys have been solid for the recent play, which is bad news for Frazier, who was sent down again. Like I said last show, he's the 26th man. He's going to be the guy that's called up and sent down a number of times this year. Other roster moves. Sanchez goes on the DL as we expected. Yankees said he's probably going to miss 3 to 4 weeks. I thought there was an interesting quote from Boone, who said maybe it's a time that we make sure he's staying proactive with his conditioning so that when he does come back, he's in the best possible place so that he can be physically sound the rest of the way. Do you think this is a shot by Boone?
I don't know if it's a shot as much as it is a worry for him being inactive for X amount of time and conditioning getting worse and spiraling quicker than, you know, another player would, you know, how it would affect another player. I think it would affect a guy like Gary Sanchez probably a lot more drastically than it would a guy who's in very good condition. So I think he's being careful with the way that they're going to treat him. And I think that's probably the right move, but you know, it's a slight little jab, but at the same time, he's a catcher and he's a bigger body duding it up on the side. What are you going to do?
I think the fact that catchers get banged up more, but like last year we saw him pull a bicep muscle and he missed a month, and now he pulled a groin muscle and he's going to miss a month.
Yeah. And that's not what they want. They don't want him any of these soft tissue injuries any longer. Let's do some stretching, UI injuries. Let's do some Pilates, you know, get on the machines. Let's go, Gary.
Higgy was also called up. He still is hitless, 0 for 20.
Poor bastard.
And Gallegos was called up, and he actually looked pretty decent tonight.
You think Higgy's trying to say something with this number 66? I don't know. 66, Clint Frazier's 77.
Oh, I see.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like it's the new age. It's the cool thing to do. He's
something tells me Higgy doesn't pick his number and he gets whatever they assign him.
60. I'd be happy with that assigned number after, because Judge made it cool by going with the high double digit number. And then Frazier backed it up with the 77. So he's like, you know, so that's now a trend of the younger baby bombers. And it's kind of a cool thing. So,
I mean, let's be real. Rick Vaughn made it cool, number 99.
He absolutely did. But Aaron Judge, brought it back. What's old is new.
Brandon Drury has been getting more time at first base. He's going to start playing first base more regularly, which is what we talked about last week. People are calling for Drury to be called up because Bird is really struggling. Boone also had an interesting quote about Drury. He was asked if Drury's going to get the call up soon, and Boone said that's not on the front burner with us.
Yeah.
So do you think this is because they want to get him more time at first base? Do you think it's because there's no room for him on the roster, or are they fudging with his service time, which some people are theorizing?
Yeah, it could be a little bit of everything. What was the magic date when Chris Carter got released? July 4th?
6th? July 4th.
Was it really Independence Day?
It was Independence Day. Come on, it was Freedom for America.
I did not even realize that. That's a beautiful. What a great day for that to happen. We can actually celebrate that every year.
So I'm probably going to get yelled at on Twitter. The last game he played for the Yankees was July 4th. I don't know when they actually released him.
It's close enough in my book.
Let's call it July 4th.
So maybe there's a magic date. They're trying to, you know, go back to something like that with Neil Walker, because Neil Walker is still not hitting the ball. And he got a little unlucky tonight with some plays in the field, but he's just, I don't know. There doesn't seem like there's really much for him to do at this point on this roster. When you got a guy like Brandon Drury down there, who is now going to be playing first base, who is a AAA all-star. And
yeah. And if they call him up now, he can't play in the all-star game at AAA. That's going to be a real sadness for him.
I mean, it's so crazy seeing the fact that he got it.
You don't go to that game if you're him, right?
Man. I don't think so. I think you gotta do the cool guy thing. And not
I think
that
you're
game.
Busy. You're busy on vacation or something.
I got better things to do.
No,
I gotta,
thank you.
I gotta wash my hair.
Yeah,
but you know the fact that we have this guy down there who's just lighting up AAA, got nominated. He's been down there long enough to get nominated for the All-Star game is crazy.
It's not fair. It's not fair because he's a major league player who can now see the ball.
I guess
maybe it would be fair if he couldn't see the ball, but he can see the ball now.
Maybe he can't see the ball, and that's what it's just AAA, and this is what he looks like in AAA. Look, the guy's ready to go. He's talked about it. He's proving it, and I don't know why we got to deal with this Neil Walker thing any longer. I kind of feel like the Neil Walker thing could still, like, at any moment turn around just because of his history, but I can't keep saying that because it's not happening. And if it was going to happen, I think it would have already happened. So I don't know what they're waiting for at this point. It's been a long enough time to see if he's going to hit, and he's just not hitting.
Do you think they're keeping Neil Walker because they don't want him going to a competitor like the Red Sox? Because the Red Sox could actually use some infield depth. Pedroia's been injured a ton.
Yeah, and they just picked up somebody today. They just got Brandon Phillips.
Oh yeah, Brandon Phillips.
I just saw that. Yeah. So they just
was a thing.
Yeah, yeah. They got what's his Twitter name? It's like the dude or the man. I forget what it is. But now they have some depth. We talk about that with Chad. I was talking to him about, you know, what are they going to do at second base? Because second base is definitely a mystery for the Red Sox right now, with them not knowing when Pedroia is going to get back and Nunez not having the greatest season. So there's definitely some things happening. And obviously, I think this might tell you more about, you know, what they think Pedroia's, you know, what his situation is anyway for coming back. But yeah, I don't know. I don't think they're worried about Neil Walker going and signing anywhere. I mean, if he's going to be the same guy, like, you can't worry about that. That's not something you can worry about. So no, I don't think that's part of it.
Yeah. And if they are manipulating Jury's service time, that's kind of shitty to do to a guy who already proved he's in the major leagues. This is not like the situation with Gleyber Torres, where he's a rookie phenom and they're doing the best business decision and you just stick him in the minors for two more weeks before he makes his major league debut. Drury has proved he's a major league player. He had a weird injury, and to keep him in the minors strictly for this, I think would be really, really in poor taste and could actually backfire, because Drury could resent you if that's what you're doing.
I mean, I'm not worried about resentment. That's not something that I'm going to worry about a major league player coming up and doing and affecting his game, because then we got bigger problems if that's going to actually come into play. The other thing here is the roster. I mean, it's a legitimate concern if you bring him up. Does he play every day? Can you play these guys enough where they're going to get the time that they need in the field and at the bat? That's an absolute concern, because he's an everyday player. He's been playing every day in AAA. He comes up. Is he going to play every day? Probably not. I mean, maybe you could fit him in and give other guys more off days, but then you're giving those guys more off days. And do you want to do that? So there's a lot of decisions to be made. You know, if Greg Bird is not hitting any longer, if he does not come back at some point and prove that he can hit, then, you know, Drury's going to get more playing time at first base. But I don't think they're there yet, because this team is still winning. And until this team is not still winning, they can do whatever the hell they want. That's the thing. They're winning. So why not play your options at that point?
I don't think they're going to give up on Greg Bird anytime soon.
I don't think they're going to. No, I'm not saying they are. But I'm saying that if he's not hitting and Drury were up, then Drury would get more playing time. But I just don't think they're at that point right now.
So we saw Neil Walker play first base on Wednesday night against a right-handed pitcher, and the Yankees are facing three left-handed pitchers over the weekend against Boston. So that means Bird could, in theory, sit for like five straight days. I don't think they'll sit him every game against Boston, but he's probably going to sit one or two days against Boston.
I mean, you just pull up the videotape of him hitting the home run off of Andrew Miller, and we can all talk about how if he can hit lefties. I mean, the guy can hit. He's just not doing it yet, so I don't know what the deal is with him. You know, and unfortunately, I'm not going to go out and say he's 100% healthy either, because we've also seen Greg Bird go out there and play, and then all of a sudden he's injured, and oh, we hear later that he's been dealing with an injury for the entire time, and the Yankees didn't want to get a scan on it, or he didn't tell anybody about it, I just don't know what to make of it anymore. Right. I really don't.
Who knows with him?
It's a big mystery.
I'm very much looking forward to this series. It just seems like that's what everyone is waiting for on Wednesday. The lineup was weird. The pitchers were weird. The Yankees weren't trying. Fans didn't seem to care the Yankees lost. It's just like, let's move forward to Boston. This is what everyone's really paying attention to.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Trap game. Trap game, ready to go to Boston.
This was week 12 against the Jets.
Yeah, thank you very much. That was a freaking blow, but it's probably accurate. They're more concerned about the softball game tomorrow night than the Phillies.
So like I said, follow us on social media. We're going to be tweeting out stuff from that event. And then for everyone who is coming to the BP Crew event on Friday, we will see you there. Scott, any last words?
Yeah, for those of you that are coming to the game, if you're going to the bar ahead of time, get there early, because I've been talking with the bar owner, and from what he's saying and from what I remember as well, the line for Boston series, he said, starts at like, you know, 4 o'clock. He said sometimes there's a line outside. So get there early, get your beers in, because it seems like there's going to be a line as well. I think they open at 3 o'clock. So I think we had a start time on this thing. erase the start time, get there when you can. The deals are there. So let's have a blast. I can't wait for this game and to hang out with everybody. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Maybe camp out the night before.
Maybe camp out. Yeah, we should set up some tents. It's a good idea.
Like when a new iPhone is coming out.
Yeah, like for like Dave Matthews tickets outside Tower Records. Yeah, we'll just camp out. No problems.
All right, guys. We'll talk to you on Monday. All eyes lyrical, all eyes divisible, all identical, quote, fly, presentable. It's been a minute since I stepped in it. Let me finish, spit a sentence, split percentage, fist and clenches, sick inventions, in suspense in the trenches, twisted wrenches, lefty loosey.
All right, guys, I want to welcome on our next guest is Mr. Chad Jennings, who is the Red Sox writer for The Athletic. You can follow him at Twitter, at ChadJennings22, and you're familiar with Chad from his Yankee days and also been on the show a few times talking about the Red Sox. So, Chad, thanks for joining us again.
Yeah, absolutely. No problem.
So, obviously, we have a pretty heated rivalry coming back into the swing and things this weekend, starting on Friday. At Yankee Stadium, Yankees and the Red Sox currently have the two best major record in baseball, and there's 13 more matchups between these two teams. So how do you see this thing working out? And do you see it, you know, just really relying on these 13 games? Because it seems like they're taking care of business otherwise.
Yeah. I think it's obviously going to play out big. I mean, I think it's going to play like this all the way. To me, the biggest difference really might be just the ability to improve at the deadline. Obviously, the Yankees farm system is better situated to make a significant addition if one's needed than the Red Sox are right now. So to me, that's one factor that I still sort of expect to play a significant role at some point this season. I mean, you know, with the Yankees trying to get a starting pitcher or want to get a bat, I mean, whatever it is, they're in a good position to do so. For the Red Sox, you know, I think they'd like to have another right-handed hitter. I think they would like to improve their bullpen. They just put Steven Wright back on the disabled list, so obviously there's some uncertainty there in the rotation. There are ways that they would like to improve, but they don't have a lot of pieces that they can move that have a ton of value to make a huge splash like the Yankees could do if they want to.
Yeah, you've mentioned in the past about, and I think people who are familiar with Dombrowski, that's kind of his style, right? Is going out and getting the selling some of the farm system to make that top part of the roster extremely top heavy and diminish some of it. So, I mean, looking at what they do have in their system right now, what kind of a return do you think they can get? I mean, it seems like, you know, like you said, a right-handed bat or maybe a bullpen arm. What do you think they're going to be targeting at the deadline?
Yeah. Well, I think they'll get a reliever. Dombrowski gets relievers. I mean, he's done that. Every year he's been here, it's a market that's easy to jump into in the middle of the season. And it's a need that I think is maybe not always glaring with the Red Sox. I mean, Joe Kelly and Matt Barnes have pitched pretty well as sort of a seventh and eighth inning guy. But they're not carrying a true left-on-left guy, which I think they could use. They have pieces that you can get an arm. I mean, they're going to be able to get a bullpen arm. Another question for them is if they do want to get that bat, you know, they're probably weakest right now at second base, where Pedroia is still on the disabled list. Eduardo Nunez has not played as well coming off of his own knee injury. But it's hard to find a big offensive upgrade at second base. So then you're looking at maybe getting a guy who, I mean, you could do a DH and just bench Jackie Bradley, put JD Martinez in the outfield and just go get a pure hitter. A slot in a DH. I mean, there are places to get a guy, but what they don't have, you know, like Michael Chavis, their top prospect, was hit with a 50-game suspension to start this season. Right. Jay Groom, they're probably their top pitching prospect, just went down with Tommy John. Their top pick from last year's draft has like a 5-something ERA and A ball. It's just, this was a pretty thin system to begin with, and it's not been a good start to the year. And in terms of some of the like real impact guys. And so you have to think that hurts their ability to go out and get a really big impact guy like the Yankees could do if they want to move, you know, Frazier or Chance Adams or some of these guys, Justin Sheffield, some of the guys they have up in the top of the farm system, you know, they could, if they want to, they could dump some of those guys and go get a real impact guy. I think it would be harder for the Red Sox to pull that off.
Do you think that they'll have to give up somebody that's closer to the major league roster, if not on the major league roster, to to improve on certain areas of their team. I mean, you're talking about those the prospects and having a 50-game suspension for your top prospect. While he's not injured and, you know, he would be theoretically a team's not going to need them this year, but it's still going to hurt the value. So if they're trying to go after one of the bigger bullpen arms, just, you know, San Diego or going to Oakland for a guy like Blake Treinen, it seems like it would be pretty hard to make a deal like that, especially with the market, how we've seen, you know, how high it can get for relievers at the deadline.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably true. They do have some guys. I mean, they have some arms lower in the system, and so it's going to be a little bit of what our team's really looking for. I mean, we've seen the Yankees do this, where they've traded off some just sort of hard-throwing young guys and have been able to get some talent that way.
Yep.
I think the Red Sox are situated to be able to do that. But, yeah, I mean, the problem that, you know, their young talent on the Major League roster is not the sort of up-and-down guys that some of like the Yankees have. The top young talent for the Red Sox is Andrew Benintendi and Rafael Devers. And, you know, you're not going to trade them to get an eighth inning guy.
Right.
And they don't have that. Unless somebody were to really value Brian Johnson or Blake Swihart or, you know, some of these guys that are, I mean, really basically like the 24th and 25th guys on the roster. Those are former first round picks, but they're just not, you know, they're not huge impact guys right now, and I doubt that's enough to bring back a real impact reliever or an impact bat. So then you're probably looking at, is a team going to be open to sort of rolling the dice with some of these younger guys that are farther away from the big leagues but have considerable raw talent? You just got to take on a lot of the risk reward.
You mentioned talking about getting somebody and actually looking for potentially a DH and just slotting J.D. Martinez back into the outfield and actually benching Jackie Bradley Jr. And we all know what he can do defensively. I mean, we've seen it against the Yankees. He's stolen home runs from that well in the outfield at Fenway before against the Yankees. I mean, he's phenomenal, but definitely he's what, sub 600 OPS and has definitely lost some playing time along the way. Do you think that the Red Sox see him as more of a defensive bench player at this point, and that's, you know, really a direction that they're going to look at?
No, I think that they've shown a lot of patience with him, and it's starting to pay off, even though the numbers aren't coming around. Jackie is hitting he's hit the ball really hard lately, and his batting average balls in play is really low. I mean, there's a lot of luck factor right now in that his offensive numbers are this bad. He should be better than this. He has been better lately, but hasn't necessarily gotten many results to go with it. Mm-hmm. So I think that urged them a lot, and they have stuck with playing. And they sat him for, like 3 out of 4 or 4 out of 5 or something and tried to get him to kind of reset. And that seems to have maybe had an impact. I don't suspect that is the go-to plan for them. I don't think they're actively looking to make Jackie a bench player, because not only putting him in center, he just has such a great center fielder, but it just lines up Benintendi and Betts so well, you know, then Benintendi becomes one of the better left fielders, and Mookie's maybe the best right fielder in baseball defensively. So, you know, their whole outfield lines up so well when Jackie's out there playing center. I don't think that's the plan, but it's just, if they do decide they really need a bat, that just seems like the easiest way to do it. You know, it's just that's where you could make it fit most naturally, is to just put JD in the outfield, put Jackie on the bench, and just get some guy, preferably a right-handed hitter, who can just hit some home runs and out of that DH spot.
It's funny, I don't know if you remember the narrative when Brian Cashman made that trade for Aaron Hicks. And the whole narrative, a lot of it was by, you know, from people who were talking about it, was Jackie Bradley Jr. or Aaron Hicks is the next Jackie Bradley Jr. because he came off, you know, he came out so hot in the beginning.
Yeah.
So now I don't know if that's a good thing or not, or who's, if maybe Jackie Bradley Jr. needs to be the next Aaron Hicks. I don't know where we are with that comparison.
It is funny that's the way that I remember that comparison well. I mean, I remember Cash making that comparison as well. Then, you know, it took Jackie a little bit to get going, but it's probably fairly similar in terms of you know, where these teams are with those two players. You know, I mean, you've seen Hicks have considerable ups and downs, and there's a belief, I think, in both organizations in those two players. So I think each one is more inclined to give them the benefit of the doubt. I think that's where the Red Sox are with Jackie. The struggles are obvious, but I think there is still a belief that he is a better hitter, certainly that he's a better hitter than he's shown this year.
It seems like they've tried to, and they're really pretty much succeeded in, you know, getting more power in the lineup with J.D. Martinez. Moreland's, had what, 13 home runs. Mookie Betts is hitting the ball out of the ballpark. So it seems like these guys are definitely have found their power stroke. Do you see more of a second half explosion from a guy like Devers? Because it seems like he struggled a little bit at third base.
Yeah, his defense has actually been better this year, much better this year than expected. I mean, he's been, I expected him to be a butcher over there from everything I'd heard about him, but he's been pretty good this year. But it's been inconsistent. I mean, he plays like a 21-year-old kid. You know, I mean, he still, you know, makes some mistakes, and offensively, it's really come and gone. I mean, you know, he's had some power, but it just is, it just hasn't been there with any consistency. But again, this is also maybe going back to the state of the farm system. There's not an alternative. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's nobody else. Unless Pedroia got healthy again, and then you could maybe think about, you know, playing Nunez and Brock Holt over there. They're going to stick with Devers. But I think you're right that there's the potential for more impact. Certainly there's a potential for more impact from Devers than what they've gotten from him so far. I think that's the big thing. I mean, you look at this lineup, the way they have it situated with Mookie and then Benintendi and then JD, Sander Bogaerts, Mitch Moreland. I mean, that's a really good 1-5. Mookie has been the best thing in the league this side of Mike Trout, and Benintendi's played well. Moreland is having, I mean, there's a good chance he can make the All-Star team as a first baseman.
Yeah.
Now, it's a weak year for first baseman, but he's had a really tremendous year, and JD obviously is JD Martinez. But they just haven't gotten very much at all from the bottom half of the lineup. You know, Devers has been so hit or miss. Nunez has been kind of doesn't have the same explosiveness that he's had in the past. Pedroia is still hurt. They've gotten almost no offense out of their catchers. So that I think they're waiting. And as we've already discussed, Jackie, I mean, they're waiting to get something more to lengthen that lineup. Something I wrote on Monday is that Mookie in the leadoff spot has been tremendous. I mean, terrific. And it's played out the way you'd want a leadoff guy to play, but it has really limited the chances for him to drive in runs because he's getting to the plate with runners on base even less often than most other teams do. You know, so you know you're going to give up some of that when you put a guy in the leadoff spot, but the Red Sox bottom of the order has been so bad that it's affected that even more than you'd expect. You know, I think they knew they were going to give up some RBI chances for Mookie by hitting him first, but they've really taken him away. I mean, it's something like only 18% of his at bats have been with the runner in scoring position. That's rough. And to remedy that, I think they've got to get something going out of 7, 8, 9, and they haven't had that this year.
Have they talked about moving somebody else? Is there any conversation about moving somebody else into that leadoff spot and moving Betts down, like say moving Bogart up or one of these other guys? I think ideally if Jackie Bradley Jr. would start hitting, I mean, he seems like that would be a nice little fit, but not there yet.
Yeah, this has been Cora's thing since December. I mean, from the moment he was hired, he said he wants Mookie to be the leadoff hitter.
Yeah.
He's doubled down on that consistently throughout the year. That's absolutely where he thinks it. And he makes the case that, look, it's working. Like, I know, like, right. we asked him about it a lot, actually. You know, you're losing some RBI chances for this guy. And his point is always, yeah, I guess, but it's the best leadoff hitter in baseball. And that's undeniably correct. I mean, his on-base percentage is the highest. His OPS is the highest of any leadoff hitter. I mean, he's just, by far, he's been the best leadoff hitter in baseball. It's just they don't have, you know, they just haven't gotten guys on front of him, and they don't have another true leadoff guy. You know, there's not a Brett Gardner guy on this team who has that speed element and takes pitches and is going to try to work some walks even when he's not hitting, can still get on base. They don't really have that. I mean, the closest proximities are probably Mookie or Andrew Benintendi or Xander Bogaerts, and all three of those guys you could make a case for being more sort of middle of the order best than necessarily true leadoff hitters. So, no, I mean, they're pretty committed to Mookie in the leadoff spot. It's just now it's a matter of, you kind of take the good and the bad with that.
Are the Red Sox expecting anything at all at this point from Pedroia this year? And, I mean, even though he's hurt, does he still have a presence in the clubhouse?
Oh, yeah, he's around for sure. I think that they do. I mean, I think they think that he's going to be back, but, you know, the cartilage restoration stuff that he went through on his knee, is a it's a common NBA surgery,
right?
But it's really rare in baseball, and so there's really everything's so uncertain. It's kind of I don't know what the right word is, but it's not bizarre to witness, but it's it's one of the few times when they're saying like, well, we don't know what's next. It's like, do you believe them? I mean, they literally don't know. It's not a matter of, not wanting to set a timetable before they have to, or not wanting to talk about it before they have to. I mean, I think they really just don't know. There's not a lot of, to go on to tell them exactly, where he's supposed to be in his recovery, when he has a setback, what that's supposed to mean. It's pretty uncertain, but they are certainly treating this with full expectation that he's going to play later in the year. And it might be that he plays 2 days and takes a day off, the rest of the way. But no, they're expecting to get something back out of him. It's just, it's really uncertain what that'll be or how often it'll be.
Yeah, you just kind of rang something in my head. The same injury, was this the one? Was this similar to what like Kobe had? And I forget, maybe it was mm-hmm. a Tiger Woods where they went to Germany for plasma spinning. Wasn't that the procedure that would help rebuild the cartilage?
No, this he had microfracture.
Yeah. Okay.
So he had microfracture on sort of the bottom of his knee, and then on the top they just injected cartilage from a cadaver.
Oh wow.
It's similar to like what Amari Stoudemire had, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah, no, it's not ideal.
I guess I'd take Kobe's knees over Amari's knees.
Yeah. As Pedroia said a few times though, he was like, look, but most of the guys who've done this are basketball players who are, 6'10" and 270 pounds. He's like, I'm 5'8", 170. Like, and it was a fair point. He's like, my knees just don't get pounded the way those guys do. So he was hopeful that meant a quicker recovery. And again, I don't know. It's hard to tell if he's had a quicker recovery or not. Cause it's, you can't limit minutes kind of the way that you do in the NBA and stuff like that. So the comeback has been different. I think it was he's played 3 games this year. I think it was the first one or the second one he had to score from second. So, you'd like to ease him in, a ball gets hit in the corner and he's got to go. There is no like, oh, take it easy coming around third. Like, no, like you've got to score on this play. I think that's made it complicated too, in terms of trying to get him back and trying to ease him into baseball activities. Is some of this stuff, there is no easing in. Some of this is just, you've got to be able to go and you got to be able to do it.
All right, going to the other side of the game and talking about the pitching staff, we all know what Chris Sale is. I mean, he's been, as advertised, he's still one of the more dominant pitchers in the American League. I think the big question mark for everybody, well, maybe a couple question marks, which Rick Porcello would show up. I mean, I think that's definitely something that it's on people's minds, and it seems like the good Porcello has showed up. And then David Price is the other guy who's such a wild card, it seems like, where, he's had such success in the past during the regular season, but he's just had such weird things happen in Boston with, the injuries, the video game stuff, skipping starts against the Yankees. There was a whole narrative from all of us Yankee fans talking about how he was scared to pitch against New York, and he's actually, slotted for Sunday. So I guess David Price first, what's the overall feeling with him right now? Is he back in the good graces and ready to contribute at a high level?
Yeah, it really is like a completely different person than last year. He explained some of last year's, weirdness.
Yeah.
But just,
it's the best way to describe it.
The frustration of being hurt. Yeah. Yeah, it was. It was truly bizarre. I mean, I covered the Yankees for 7 years and you think you see everything there. I'd never seen anything like this. It was just odd. It was always assuming a fight.
Right.
Just strange.
Yeah.
And it hasn't been that way this year. This year he's really been, as a reporter's point of view, he's been one of the better guys to talk to get sort of in-depth stuff. And, he's open to having conversations. He's smiling, he's laughing. Even the stuff he talked about when he had the carpal tunnel issue, and it had come out right after we at The Athletic had written a story about, how many guys on the Red Sox are playing Fortnite. And he was one of the main guys talking about how often he played, and I have no idea if that is what would have caused some, or even would have played a role in this carpal tunnel thing. But it was, it obviously caught people's eye. And he was okay handling that. You know, he seemed all right to talk about it. And he's been really good. He had I think it was 3 out of 4 starts, kind of maybe late April, early May, maybe when he struggled. And then that's sort of when the injury stuff started to happen. He had this like wrist thing and the numbness and all that. But he's been excellent since then. And yeah, I know there's that narrative that he doesn't like pitching against the Yankees. And in the time that I was covering the Yankees, I saw him get shelled by the Yankees a few times. I also saw him dominate the Yankees a few times.
We choose not to remember those times.
Right, sure. But I just don't buy that he's scared to face the Yankees. I honestly just don't see anything to suggest that's correct. Stuff has come up, and he's had bad outings, and you know, the game when his hand went numb here, and I mean, it was very clear watching that something was wrong. And then he comes out after that inning, and it's like, oh, he's afraid to face him. Well, you can tell why. I mean, something's going on. I can't vouch for that his fingers really did go numb and he couldn't feel the ball. I don't know that, but that's how he explained it. And just from the way he was throwing, something was off. I mean, that just was not him. If nothing else, Price can throw strikes, and he's all over the place. So something went wrong that day. I don't think that was about nerves or about being afraid of the Yankees. I think it just is the way that played out. So I really don't think that that's a factor, but it certainly has happened enough times that it has created a narrative around him. And the fact that he hasn't been very good in the playoffs hasn't helped. I mean, that adds to this perception of a guy who shrinks from the spotlight.
Right.
But he pitched well out of the bullpen in the playoffs last year. So, you know, who knows? He's been a much better pitcher this season and a much easier guy to get along with this season than he was last year.
And Porcello seems like I said earlier, he's kind of regained that form he had 2 years ago last year.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it was an anomaly. Maybe it was, I don't know. You look at his career and it's hard to tell who he is really. But it seems like this year he's definitely
right
pitching
now,
better.
Really, yeah. The Cy year is the anomaly.
Right.
In his career.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean,
he
had never been that pitcher. He'd never been like a bad pitcher, but he'd never been that. And so last year it really felt like, okay, maybe it's just that 16 was sort of an outlier and this is more what he is. But this year he's been really good. And he's been good partly because I think last year it seemed like he got too heavy in probably trying to get away from, you know, the way guys are swinging now. It really feeds into it. It's guys are, the new launch angle stuff is really almost designed to beat a pitcher like Porcello. You know, he's working sinkers down. These guys can now just going down and getting that ball and hitting it up. So he was trying to do the, you know, the four seam thing that we see so many relievers doing now, where he goes four seamers up. But that's not his bread and butter. It's something that he can do, but he's still got to be able to work down. And this year he's been so much better at mixing pitches up and you know, he's using his little slider cutter thing again. He's throwing a lot of curveballs. His changeup has been terrific. And he's working all those pitches down in the zone along with the sinker. And then he will occasionally go up, you know, up in the zone with a four seam. And that's just made him a much better pitcher, where he has a lot more weapons to go to. You know, he's not purely a sinker ball guy, which I think at times in his career he was, you know, pretty heavy on the sinker. But he's now a guy who can kind of mix it up a little bit more and is sort of able to get away from the sinker without necessarily pitching into a zone where it's going to get hit out of the ballpark.
All right, talking one of the last things before I let you go here is this Hanley Ramirez situation.
Yeah.
Fake news, real news, who knows what's what anymore. But, you know, we saw obviously all the reports of Hanley being under federal investigation. There were talks of murder and, like, you know, drug dealing and all sorts of crazy things. I'm sure Boston fans got flashbacks of, you know, Aaron Hernandez type storylines. Yeah. Did any of this have anything to do with him being released from the Red Sox? And what are people talking about as far as Hanley Ramirez up in the Boston area?
Well, it's funny, like before it came out, and I think most outlets here were the same way. We started hearing about it at the Athletic. There was some like rumors that something was going on. So we'd been trying to track it down, you know, talk to police, trying to find reports of this stuff, trying to talk to people in baseball. Have you heard this? Have you heard this? And, And, you know, we had a few people who had heard it, but nobody had anything. It just felt like this, like, rumor that was bouncing around. And then, you know, the reporter came out and weirdly was only doing radio interviews, didn't ever write a story about it, just was doing radio hits saying what all she'd uncovered. And then, of course, then the Globe had the big story on, I can't remember when it was, Sunday maybe, basically saying that, look, what happened is this guy got pulled over, had drugs in his car, tried to claim, somehow knew Hanley, mm-hmm. claimed that it was Hanley's and, you know, FaceTimed him, I guess, during the traffic stop. All of that seems very odd, but the police are saying that Hanley basically was like, yeah, no, not mine. And yeah, you can check whatever you want. and they end up checking it. And this guy apparently came out and said that he was just trying to get out of getting in trouble. So it may be nothing, but it also may be the kind that is the kind of event that could stir a bunch of rumors of something happening. You know, I mean, there was this weird drug thing that Hanley's name did get dragged into. I mean, it's weird.
It's very strange.
It's very, very strange.
And usually when something this, I mean, even it could be nothing. It could be some guy just throwing right. another name, or it could be smoke. And, there's something now it's being covered.
It absolutely could be something, but it's just based on what we know now, it's mm-hmm. not. Like, if this is all it is, there's nothing. And I mean, believe me, people are still trying to figure out if there's more going on here. And they're just, we haven't been able to find anything beyond this that says that it's more than what it looks like on the surface. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it seems like just this crazy coincidence, and it all happened basically right after he was released.
Right.
Or right after his DFA. But again, that's another thing that caused some weirdness is the initial report said that this whole arrest coincided with Hanley being released, which is technically true if you go by the release date. Because it's coming from a news reporter who doesn't understand that Hanley was DFA'd a week before that. And, you know, doesn't understand that means the player move happened before the arrest.
Right.
You know, so it looked like on the surface that it was all connected. Like, okay, this arrest happens, and then a couple of days later, Hanley gets released. Surely that's not coincidence. But really, he'd already, for all intents and purposes, been released, and then all this stuff happened. So it doesn't look connected. It certainly the Red Sox and Major League Baseball and everyone are all saying it has, not only is it not connected, but they have no reason to even think that any of this is true. So it may just be just another weird moment in the weird life of Hanley.
Hanley being Hanley.
Yeah.
Funny because you'd think that his camp would try to be like wide open with things just to say things, because it's obviously affected, you know, his opportunities in playing baseball right now. I'd say it's a surprise that he's, you know, nobody picked him up for the league minimum to help out.
By that too, he wrote on Instagram that it's been his choice that he wanted to go home and spend time with family, and again that may be true too. I mean, again,
that's what I would say too if I didn't get any phone calls.
Completely. I completely agree with you. But, you know, you look around at the market, you know, Adam Lind, was, you know, sticking around with the Yankees for a little while, wasn't he? I mean, you know, these guys who are, you know, power hitting first base types, there's just not a great market for them. I mean, Mark Reynolds coming off a great year. I think the minor league, the Nats, you know, it's just maybe not a market that lines up very well for him. And it could be that he either genuinely doesn't care and it's just like, I'm done anyway, or, you know, read the tea leaves correctly and decided not to go after a job, or went after a job, found nothing, and was just hanging out at home. I don't know, but there's nothing here with this drug thing that makes me think that makes me say with any degree of certainty that it's related. You know, right now the everything lines up that it's just this weird coincidence and this just truly bizarre moment. But obviously that's pending. You know, you keep wanting to try to find out more because it is just so weird.
Just another day in the life of Hanley Ramirez.
Yeah, sure.
Chad, thanks so much. Definitely appreciate you coming on. This is going to be it's definitely going to be a fun weekend. We have a big event actually on Friday night, so it'll be 300 of us in right field. It's going to be a good time. And these 13 games definitely are going to be a big determining factor in the AL East.
Big deal for sure. Yeah. It's I think we came into the year expecting a two-team race, and we've definitely gotten that.
All right, if you want to follow Chad on Twitter, he's at ChadJennings22. Again, the Red Sox reporter for The Athletic. Again, thanks, Chad. Appreciate it, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah, definitely.
Hey, guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.